Good morning. So yesterday we learned something very fascinating. What did we learn yesterday? We started off discussing the Torah portion that always falls out around Purim. This is this week's Torah portion, Vayikra. And we wanted to know what its relevance is to Purim. So to understand its relevance to Purim, we started to learn what is Purim. And surprisingly, at least to me, the mitzvah that characterizes Purim more than any other is a mitzvah of celebrating on Purim until you cannot distinguish between blessed as Mordechai and cursed as Haman. This mitzvah is unique, of not just in Purim, but unique in comparison to all the other holidays, in that it's infinite, it's no limitations. Dev does mention in the notes over here that actually does mention. In other holidays, there was actually the Jewish court would send out messengers throughout the holiday to make sure people weren't getting too frivolous in their celebration. And here in Purim, we're not worried about that. The celebration is without any limitation. And so the question is, what's the significance of that kind of celebration? Why would you want to not be able to figure out, to be in such a intoxicated state where you think the hero and the villain you make a mistake between the hero and the villain? What's the point of not being able to distinguish between blessed is Mordechai and cursed is Haman? So what we learned was that there's some who say that what this means is it's not that you can't see the difference between Mordechai and Haman. It's that the words blessed is Mordechai and the words cursed is Haman have the same numerical value, and you're supposed to reach a state of intoxication where you cannot make that simple mathematical calculation. But we weren't satisfied with that explanation, because what's the relevance to the numbers of blessed is Mordechai and cursed is Haman specifically? The point is that you shouldn't be able to do arithmetic. You should be so intoxicated, thank you, that you can't do simple arithmetic. So if that's the point, you're so intoxicated, you can't do simple arithmetic, why does the Talmud specifically mention not being able to do this equation over all other equations? There must be something about those words specifically. So to understand this, we started to learn about the meaning of numbers in general. And we learned that whatever number something has, it's not just it happens to have that number, it's because the divine energy in that particular object is connected to that number. So, surprise, surprise, blessed is Mordechai is the same as cursed is Haman. What does that mean? How are they the same? If you could think of two polar opposites, the example would be, what are the two things that are most opposite of each other you could think of? Blessed is Mordechai and cursed is Haman. And yet they're the same gematria, the same number. And we explain this. We explain that the whole point of the existence of evil is only that the Jewish people should take the evil and they should not just destroy it, but transform the darkness to light. So it comes out, why does the Eibush create a situation of cursed as Haman? It's the point of this is that there should be something more in blessed as Mordechai. The purpose of evil is for something better happening and descent for the purpose of ascent. So that's the meaning of the words of the Talmud. You should celebrate till you can't distinguish from cursed as Haman and blessed as Mordechai, that you shouldn't be able to see a difference between them, because the purpose of cursed is Haman is the blessed should be Mordechai. You don't see that the evil and the good as two different, two completely departmentalized things. Rather, you see how they're all part of the same purpose, and more deeper, as I concluded yesterday in the end of his Gimel, it's not just that you can't distinguish between them. Is that what do you see when you see cursed is Haman? You see in cursed is Haman right away, blessed is Mordechai. It's not only that. Let me give this example for perhaps. L'chaim v'rocha. When the previous Rebbe was in prison, famously, one of his seven times he was in prison, the KGB guard puts up his pistol and he says to him, this toy is a way of making people talk. And the previous Rebbe responded that this toy can only frighten someone who has only one world and many gods. But for someone who has one god and two worlds, this toy doesn't frighten them at all, and the person or demon has never been born, nor will they be born, that can move me from my principles. So the previous Rebbe said two different things. One is that there is one god, and the other is that there are two worlds. The relevance of two worlds to the pistol is clear. A pistol has the only governance on one. But what's the emphasis of the previous Rebbe that there's one God? And one explanation is this, is that when you're in a situation where there is a KGB officer waving his pistol at you, your natural feeling would be, I'm not in good hands right now. I'm in someone else's hands. There's some other force over here. So the previous Rebbe said, I don't believe in two gods. I believe in one God. And therefore, what is the meaning of cursed as Haman? It's all about blessed Mordechai. In the scenario where there is a cursed Haman, a Jew realizes that the whole purpose of this to begin with is blessed as Mordechai. That's why they have the same number. Because that's the whole, it's not just the, when a Jew sees cursed as Haman, he knows that's all about blessed Mordechai. It's not revealed, it's not openly clear, but that's what it's about. The Rebbe said famously in a letter to the first president of Israel that from the day he went to school and even before, he pictured a beautiful redemption, so beautiful that it would justify all of the tragedies and all of the pogroms and all of the decrees against the Jewish people, that we would be able to actually sincerely say when Mashiach comes, thank you, Hashem, for being angry at me. Thank you, Hashem, for your wrath upon me. We able to see that. We able to see how all the curses Haman was for this blessed be Mordechai in time of Mashiach. That's what we'll be able to see then. And that's that we're supposed to go to on Purim, to be able to see that. But the question is this. Is Dalit? Dafer, but for Shtein, we still need to understand. When you do indeed transform cursed Haman, cursed be Haman, to blessed be Mordechai, is doch dan taken the tuck in the shades of Shanzei. Then indeed, once there's been a transformation, then indeed there is no difference between one and the other. Why does the Talmud say you should be so drunk until you can't distinguish between cursed as Haman and blessed be Mordechai? It sounds like from the Talmud that there is a difference between them and that you should not be aware of the difference. If there is no difference between them, which is where we're going, which was where we thought we were going, that you should see the transformation of darkness to light, then once darkness is transformed to light, then it's part of light. So why does the Talmud seem to indicate that there still is a difference between them and it's just that you don't know the difference? So we'll understand this by exploring something else. Let me just paraphrase from the Yiddish. The Talmud says that when you do tshuva out of love, you cause the sins that you've done on purpose to be considered mitzvahs. It says in Tanya, because the yearning that you have because of the mistakes that you've made causes you to have a different kind of relationship to Hashem that you would never have had you never made this mistake. That's why the sin itself is considered a positive thing. It's considered a mitzvah because it contributes to your sin contributes to your relationship with Hashem. But it's not just that your sin contributes to something positive in the future. The sin itself turns into a mitzvah. That means the godly energy that is in the sin, the sparks of holiness that are in sin, are transformed to merit. What that means is this, just briefly before we go to where we're going. There's a concept in the Talmud like this, we learned a couple of times. If you have a drop of milk that falls into a cholent pot, in order for the cholent pot to retain its kosher status, there needs to be 60 times more kosher than non-kosher. If there isn't, the entire cholent pot, if it's not 60 times more meat than milk, the whole cholent pot is now non-kosher. What happens now if this first cholent pot falls into a second cholent pot? Do you need to have 60 times against the original mixture, the original amount of milk that fell in the first cholent pot? Or do you need to have 60 times more the entire now forbidden mixture? And the answer is, you have to have chaticha nasis nevela. The kosher itself becomes non-kosher. And therefore, you need, when the first cholent pot falls into the second, you need to have 60 times more cholent than the first cholent. The kosher becomes non-kosher. And so too, the sparks of holiness that animate the sin, they are transformed to holiness. So those, when you do tshuva, they were previously so darkened that it was as if they themselves became non-kosher, although they're sparks of holiness. But they're in such a state of exile, it's as if they're like the kosher substance which has become forbidden. They have a similar transformation. They have been so darkened that it's as if they have become evil itself. However, through tshuva, you can bring back those sparks of holiness. Indeed, the sins themselves are chas v'shalom, they're not holy. But the sparks of holiness can become transformed to holiness. Okay, so that's the advantage that a Baal Tshuva has that a tzaddik doesn't have. And that's why the Talmud says that the place where a person returns to Hashem reaches, the perfect tzaddik cannot reach. Why can you reach a higher place? Because a tzaddik can only elevate the sparks of holiness in kosher things. He can elevate the sparks of holiness which come from klipas nega. They come from a place of divine concealment to a certain extent, but not non-kosher. Klipas nega means there's a concealment, there's a klipa, but nega, there's still a little bit of light. A tzaddikim can elevate things which have a little bit of light. But the sparks of holiness which have fallen into the three impure klippas, the lower concealment that animate the non-kosher things, at tzaddik, and according to Torah, they can't be elevated. On the contrary, according to Torah, not only can you not elevate those sparks, but the Torah says, don't get involved, stay away from those sparks, stay away from those things. However, Baal Tshuva, he's able to elevate those sparks that fell into the lowest of klippas, and not only they fell into the non-kosher items, but they've already been used to violate Hashem's will. The person's already done sins with those non-kosher items. So he's taking the sparks of holiness that have fallen already in to animate this non-kosher substance, and he's done something. He made it even worse. The non-kosher animal is indeed a spark of holiness which is fallen into the three lowest of klippas. But now when you do a sin with that same non-kosher animal and you eat it, you bring it even lower. Because violating Hashem's will is against Hashem. When you eat it, you're going against Hashem's will. The non-kosher animal is not violating Hashem's will. Hashem actually wants it to exist. Hashem wants something very low to exist, but Hashem wants it to exist. When you eat it, you're going against Hashem's will. So the Baal Tshuva is transforming the non-kosher, the unholy, the lowest thing, and he's able to elevate those sparks too. He'll elevate those to the side of merit as well. The reason why a Baal Tshuva has the power to elevate those sparks of sin, even though they're the opposite of Hashem's will, is because a Baal Tshuva, with his mitzvah, with his yearning to cleave to Hashem, his tshuva connects the essence of Hashem. The essence of Hashem is called the Baal HaRatzon. The Baal HaRatzon means the one who desires, not the desire itself, but the one who desires. So the Baal Tshuva, with his tshuva reaches the essence of Hashem, the author of the mitzvah. And Hashem is not, God forbid, limited to want one thing and not to want another thing. Hashem can want whatever he wants to want. And therefore, the Baal Tshuva is able to affect the change of the sparks of holiness that have fallen into the sin to be transformed. It says in the Talmud that when Hashem created the world, he created light and he created darkness. And the Talmud says light refers to the deeds of the righteous. Darkness refers to the deeds of the wicked. And the Talmud says, I don't know what Hashem likes better, deeds of the righteous or deeds of the wicked, because Hashem has no limitations. And so Hashem is beyond everything. So So light and darkness are equal compared to the infinity of Hashem. I don't know what he likes more. However, the Torah continues and says that God saw that light was good. That means that God chose to like the deeds of the righteous. And God chose not to like the deeds of the wicked. But before we get to God's choice, God has free will. He chooses to like the deeds of the righteous. So it's not that he has to like the deeds of the righteous. He just chooses to. It should be said that when Hashem chooses something, it's not like he happens to choose something. Now it's like a weak connection Hashem has with something. Hashem is connected in his very essence to a mitzvah. When Hashem chooses a mitzvah, it's not like when we choose something, it's because of some of the characteristics of that thing. It's not because of the essence of who we are chooses that whatever choice we made. But Hashem's essence chooses a mitzvah. It's a choice that comes from his very essence. I guess a Jew comes from Hashem, therefore our choice also is mirrors that, and our choice for mitzvahs comes from essence as well. But the point I wanted to say is that Hashem's choice in a mitzvah is also from his very essence. However, he's not forced to only want a mitzvah. On the contrary, he could choose whatever he wants. Once he chooses, yes, Hashem chooses from his very essence. So since he's not forced to choose anything, so you can't say that sin has such a power over him that and have the ability to conceal the sparks of holiness which are in sin. That Hashem, so to speak, can't extract them anymore. You can't say that. Hashem chose the deeds of the righteous, but he just chose it to be that way. He's not forced. The sin itself doesn't have any weight, doesn't have any leverage to that Hashem cannot now extract the sparks of holiness from the sins because he chose the... Because as Talmud says, I don't know what Hashem wants. Hashem is not limited to anything. So the Baal Tshuva reaches with his tshuva to the author of mitzvahs, to Hashem himself, who gave us the Torah mitzvahs. Tzadikim, even if they reach the highest of levels, they reach the level of called Ava B'Tanugim, a love of Hashem, which they delight in their love for Hashem. But there's still a someone. There's still someone who loves. And therefore, what do they connect with? They connect with Hashem's desire. But our Baal Tshuva, what is Baal Tshuva doing? Baal Tshuva is not satisfying the will of Hashem. Baal Tshuva is someone is not happy with his situation. On the contrary, Baal Tshuva is not happy with his situation, and he says, "I want to change from where I am, and I want to come closer to Hashem." So he's not connecting with the will of Hashem. On the contrary, he's connecting with the author of the will of the one who wants, the Baal HaRatzon, Hashem who wants, not the desires of Hashem, but the author of those desires. And that's the meaning of the celebration of Purim, to you can't distinguish between cursed as Haman and blessed be Mordechai. This power to transform cursed as Haman to blessed be Mordechai, where does that come from? It comes from not knowing. It comes from being devoted to Hashem beyond logic and reason. The tzaddik service of Hashem is beautiful, but it follows a certain pattern. He's doing the will of Hashem. It's logical that it's something that's what Hashem wants. It makes sense that the tzaddik is satisfying the will of Hashem, and therefore it elicits divine pleasure. But the Baal Tshuva, he is someone who is bearing the friction of going against his unpleasant state and returning to Hashem. So there's a big predominant energy there of not being happy with where you are and being devoted to Hashem beyond logic and reason. And that's why the Talmud says that you have to celebrate important until you don't know the difference between blessed be Mordechai and cursed be Haman, that the Baal Tshuva reaches a place beyond logic and reason. And that elicits, that draws down the essence of Hashem. And Hashem, what did Hashem say? We don't know what Hashem wants. We don't know if he wants the deeds of the righteous or deeds of the wicked. The essence of Hashem is beyond having an affinity one to the other. The essence of Hashem is beyond both. And the Baal Tshuva connects the essence of Hashem through his bittul, through his devotion to Hashem beyond logic and reason. Through him being devoted to Hashem beyond logic and reason, he connects the essence of Hashem, and now it's possible for there to be the transformation of the evil that he's done to good, to the transformation of their sins to mitzvahs himself. All right, Mitzvah Hashem will try to explain a little better tomorrow. Maybe so.
Did you send it?
No, you've... Oh, thanks.